The Right to Thrive, Wolves, Deep Ecology, and the Illusion of Separateness. My chest tightens whenever I reread Otto Leopold's account of shooting the wolves that eventually transformed his ethics and science. He writes, "In those days, we had never heard of passing up a chance to kill a wolf. In a second, we were pumping lead into the pack, but with more excitement than accuracy. How to aim a steep downhill shot is always confusing. When our rifles were empty, the old wolf was down, and a pup was dragging a leg into impassable slide rocks. We reached the old wolf in time to watch a fierce green fire dying in her eyes. I realized then, and have known ever since, that there was something new to me in those eyes, something known only to her and to the mountain. From Thinking Like a Mountain in a Sand County Almanac." One of my first mentors, the late Huey Johnson, assigned the reading of Aldo Leopold's A Sand County Almanac as my first task when I began to work at the Resource Renewal Institute in 1990. Huey, the former Secretary for Natural Resources under Jerry Brown's first administration in California, was the kind of man who would likely be canceled today. A strident conservationist who was at times incredibly gruff and occasionally explosive, he could be easily, and wrongly, construed as a man intent on exploiting the power of his status. But Huey was in fact an ardent defender of the rights of all humans and nature. He knew that without a profound paradigm shift, our culture's war against the natural world would lead to unimaginable suffering and loss for humans and the entire life community. By assigning Leopold's book, Huey began sculpting my ecological ethics while giving me permission to feel what I grew up knowing but had been educated to deny, that the other animals, the plants and trees, the land and waters, are imbued with unique forms of sentience and intelligence, and I was inexplicably connected to them. This was my first introduction to one of the principal concepts of deep ecology, the intrinsic worth of all life. Leopold, for those who are unfamiliar with his book or his essay, was exploring not the intrinsic value of wolves, but his discovery of their undeniable role in maintaining ecosystem health. And yet, while his argument for not eradicating wolves was at least partly practical, the essential part wolves play in maintaining healthy deer herds, his essay also weaves in an unspoken experience of animacy when he writes, "Yet behind these obvious and immediate hopes and fears, there lies a deeper meaning, known only to the mountain itself. Only the mountain has lived long enough to listen objectively to the howl of a wolf." Leopold's term, thinking like a mountain, was taken up by the founders of deep ecology, including Arne Næss, the Norwegian philosopher who coined the term deep ecology, to relay humanity's deep connection with the earth and the need for a total revolution in consciousness to preserve the life-supporting systems of our planet. Næss, along with philosopher George Sessions, sociologist Bill Duvall, and several others, including Joanna Macy, John Seed, and Pat Fleming, was striving to understand the root causes of the environmental crisis and to devise a truly effective response. The word deep reflected their belief that humanity's relationships with the rest of the living world and one another needed to be profoundly questioned. As Daniel Christian Wall explains, deep was in contrast with shallow and short-term approaches to the environmental crisis that stop before affecting fundamental change, often promoting technological fixes that are based on the same consumption-oriented values and methods of the industrial economy. The deep ecology approach calls for a redesign of all human-made systems based on values and methods that truly preserve the ecological and cultural diversity of natural systems. To achieve this, Næss and others believed it was essential to transcend the utilitarianism integral to Western European thought and culture and to adopt a biocentric approach that helped people experience the fact that the world is not simply a collection of resources made for human exploitation. As Næss wrote, "The well-being and flourishing of human and non-human life on Earth have value in themselves. These values are independent of the usefulness of the non-human world for human purposes. Leaving aside the numerous arguments for and against these views, deep ecology offers those of Western European descent a way to examine, debate, and develop a biocentric foundation that stems in part from Western culture and thought, without culturally appropriating from native cultures. It is important to note, however, that Ness, Macy, and others were greatly influenced by many non-Western traditions, including Buddhism. We are, as reverential ecologist Satish Kumar states, in the midst of creating a new paradigm that ends the delusion of separation and superiority that largely defines and to this day justifies the ecological and cultural destruction initiated by European conquest and industrialization. The new reality is anchored in the fact that humans are inseparable from one another and the natural world, and that all members of the life community share the right to thrive. We are, in the words of Albert Einstein, learning that human beings experience themselves, their thoughts and feelings, as something separate from the rest, a kind of optical illusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. The greatest tragedy of human existence is the illusion of separateness. Practice and experience, in addition to intellectual and scientific understanding, are key aspects of deep ecology. Thinking Like a Mountain, Towards a Council of All Beings, is very much a book about learning to reconnect with the natural world. In fact, the core of Joanna Macy's teaching is the work that reconnects. Practicing, expanding our circles of care and compassion, respect and reverence for all life relies on another fundamental tenet of deep ecology, the ecological self. As Joanna Macy states, the earth is not resources, not our sewer. The earth is our larger body. This reflects Einstein's statement that our certainty of separation is, in fact, an illusion. Ness and others saw our ability to grow beyond egocentrism and into ecocentrism as indispensable to transforming human behavior and moving the current anthropocentric culture into an ecocentric one. A full bodily experience of our connectedness is an essential part of transcending the delusion of separation and self-proclaimed superiority. There's a great deal that can be written on experiencing and integrating our indivisible bond with the planet and all members of the life community. Practices that cultivate direct connection largely define Thinking Like a Mountain, Towards a Council of All Beings. And there is no shortage of workshops, retreats, books, etc., focused on connecting people to the natural world in some manner. Ultimately, however, it appears that what awakens our kinship with the rest of the life community is the same thing that reveals our connection with other human beings, contact. And this contact, as Thoreau famously declared in The Maine Woods when describing his attempt to climb Katahdin, has the ability to completely transform us, especially when we are confronted with nature's wild forces. Close contact erodes our false sense of separation and reveals what Satish Kumar describes as the continuous exchange of life begetting life. As he explains, deep ecology is part of a continuum of thought and action that is slowly transforming the current system from one based in competition, domination, and separation to one engaged in a continuous dance of mutuality, reciprocity, connectivity, and interdependence. This circles back to Leopold's The Land Ethic and Thinking Like a Mountain, and ultimately to the wolves themselves. There is perhaps no wild animal that continues to suffer as greatly under the cruelty this delusion of separation and superiority condones and even encourages as the wolves and their cousins, the coyotes. Without integrating into the fabric of human culture the understanding that all wild canines are part of the life community with their own cultures and right to exist, and that humans are simply one member of this community, as Leopold writes, without an understanding that the earth is not made up of resources, as Macy states, and without Einstein's experience of our complete interdependence and the beauty of all life, we will fail to help this planet reweave the fabric of life. Interestingly, wolves and the changes that our minds, hearts, cultures, and economies must undergo for them to thrive could show us the way.